You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll discuss a law making its way through the state legislature intended to protect journalists' access to protests.
The key thing to keep in mind with SB 98 is that for the first time says that if the police cordon off an area where there are demonstrations happening, reporters have access beyond that cordon. So the general public may not, but a reporter does. This bill aims to specifically carve out demonstration and protest activity where the police cordon off an area as an area where journalists have sort of special access.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Before we get started, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help. So thanks. In 2020, you probably read, listened to, or watched reporting about major demonstrations against police brutality and racism. Well, the journalists who were gathering the information for those reports needed access to these protests in order to cover them effectively. Freedom of information advocates and journalists have pointed out that in an alarming number of cases, law enforcement officers were apparently interfering with reporters doing their work. In response, State Senator Mike McGuire authored a law labeled SB 98. His office said in a statement that, quote, recent police action demonstrates that these statutory protections are critical to ensure our democratic system has access to newsworthy information to inform the discussion on the crucial issues that California and the nation face. McGuire's proposal is still working its way through the legislature, and I talked about the context for it and some of the reasons why proponents think it's necessary with David Snyder, Executive Director of the First Amendment Coalition. I want to set the stage for this conversation by talking about what we've seen happening at demonstrations over the course of 2020 when it comes to journalists, because they've been arrested, detained, harassed, even injured in the field by law enforcement. Can you talk about what the First Amendment Coalition was observing and how you were speaking out about the interactions between law enforcement and journalists in California in particular?
There was a really alarming uptick of attacks on journalists of all sorts last year. And I think this is the continuation of a similar trend over the past several years. But last year in particular, we saw in California, which is our primary area of focus, a really alarming number of attacks on journalists by police that appeared to be targeted in the sense that the journalists appear to have been singled out, shot, for example, with rubber bullets. And that's really beyond the pale. I think it's one thing for police to incidentally rough up anyone, but rough up a journalist who's just doing their job. It's a completely different thing where the police feel at liberty to target a member of the media who is clearly credentialed. And in one case, and this is the case of a UCLA student reporter, had on a vest with big lettered press on it, you know, had a white helmet on. They were hit with rubber bullets as they were leaving the protest. And it's hard to imagine that that officer who shot that person with rubber bullets didn't realize that they were press. So we've been very concerned about these kinds of attacks for numerous reasons. I mean, one is that journalists have to be able to do their job without being interfered with by police. And second is they were covering events of historical magnitude, which even if they weren't of that historical magnitude, are crucial that the public be made aware of. And these are the protests that emanated from the murder of George Floyd. As you know, these protests and demonstrations were really across the country, small towns, big cities, everywhere. And in order for the public to understand the impact, the importance of those protests, it's really crucial that the public be able to see them, to hear or to read an eyewitness account. When journalists don't have the ability to actually see the thing that they're covering, to have some form of firsthand experience with that thing that they're covering, the coverage suffers, and I think suffers so greatly that there's in some ways maybe no point in covering it if you can't see it. I mean, try to imagine reading about a basketball game, for example, that the reporter never was able to see. It just doesn't work. and that kind of firsthand knowledge by reporters is essential to what they do. And so journalists understand why that's important. I think a lot of members of the public do too. But I think what's important to note for folks who are maybe not journalists or don't have family members or close associates who are journalists to understand is that they are the eyes and ears of the public. They are who bring us information about what the government's doing. And it's just crucial that they not have to rely on the government's description of what it's doing, because that's going to necessarily be constricted and biased and spun in a direction. And I'm not casting aspersions on all government officials, but that's just human nature. You know, you want to present you want to put your best face forward, and government agencies do that like everybody else. And so a key thing that journalists do is look behind that facade and say, well, what's really going on? And in order to do that, in the instance of the protests that we saw last year, they really needed to be at the scene. And it seemed increasingly difficult for them to do that and to not be detained or attacked in the process. And that's deeply disturbing.
Yeah, and maybe we can talk about exactly what kind of access it's important for journalists to have, because, you know, for folks who do not do journalism or who, as you say, don't have family members who do journalism, maybe we can frame this in terms of what kind of coverage would we not have had of these protests if we, as journalists, didn't have access to the scene. I mean, in many cases, it's just being able to be wherever we in that moment decide that something, you know, newsworthy is happening. In other cases, it's being able to freely talk to people who are participating in demonstrations so that people who are not there can have a sense for why others are participating rather than just seeing images of, and I think media was criticized for this a lot, just showing images of destruction when that happened rather than actually being part of, or not part of in the sense of participating, but rather than being present for and witnessing all of what was going on. There was a lot of fixation on certain parts. And then there's also the element of, can we expect that reporters are going to be reporting on how police conduct themselves at a protest about police brutality if they don't have access? Were you thinking along similar lines?
One way to think about this is, how would journalists know what happened at a protest if they weren't able to be there?
Yeah.
And the way they would know that in most cases for practical purposes is they would have to rely on what the government, here in this instance, likely the police, told them happened. Because if you're not at the scene, it's very difficult to find other witnesses who saw the protest or saw what the police did during the protest. And so if they were held at arm's length from the protest altogether, they'd have to rely on the government's description. And the government's description is necessarily going to leave out some things, and likely, especially in the heat of the moment, going to leave out anything that would reflect badly on the government, on the police department, or would create a storyline that they believe isn't good for them. So journalist presence there is essential. It's essential beyond, I would urge people to get past the notion that it's just about the images that ultimately end up on the television, or the audio that ultimately ends up on the radio, or the photos that ultimately end up in your newspaper. The reporter's presence at an event like that is essential to their ability to understand what happened, because that is where they're going to be able to talk to people who have been involved in the protest. They're going to be able to talk to police officers, possibly. They're going to be able to talk to business owners who've been affected. And it's only through those kind of interactions that something like a full picture can begin to be formed.
I want to also pick up on something that you said earlier, which is that this seems to be an expansion of a trend that has been going on for many years. What makes you say that? And why do you think it expanded so significantly in 2020? Was it because of the mass demonstrations that we saw alone, or were there other factors?
The trend of mistrust for suspicion of journalists. One view is that that is as old as journalism itself. And I think there's some truth to that. However, journalism, with the exception of a very small handful of the very largest national media companies, has really been hit hard by the digital transformation. And so newspapers, which once were the real bulwark for government transparency and for journalism generally, especially for people that didn't live in places like New York or LA that had, you know, large newspapers and very robust media markets, these institutions have fallen on hard times. And I think one of the effects of that is that the public has less contact with daily journalism. You know, small town daily newspapers, they're not entirely a thing of the past, but they are rapidly diminishing. And so people have less and less day in and day out contact with reporters that they trust. Local papers tend to be like, you know, Congress. If you poll people and ask, do you trust Congress as an institution? They'll say no. You know, the favorability rating for Congress as an institution is like 9% or something. But if you ask, what do you think about your congressman or your congresswoman, the numbers shoot up. And I think there's a similar effect with journalists. You know, what do you think about the media? They're going to get numbers about the same as Congress. But what do you think about your local paper? The numbers are much higher. So that kind of day in and day out connection has been lost. I think that has really impacted the public's overall understanding and trust of journalists. And then layered on top of that, over the last 10, 15 years, we've seen an increasing proclivity for media figures who may not themselves be journalists to sort of lash out directly at reporters, and even where it's not warranted. And look, I was a newspaper reporter. I'm a lawyer that works with newspaper reporters, but I'm not under the illusion that journalists are flawless or anything close to that. But attacks on journalists just because they're journalists and they're an easy target, that's a troubling trend that has really increased. And it sort of hit its apotheosis with the Trump administration, which seemed to make a point of denigrating journalists for any news that was unfavorable to the Trump administration, and that they sort of ripped the curtain away and no longer said, you know, here's an inaccurate fact or here's where the journalist was sloppy. They just, Trump himself and his administration just unabashedly attacked journalists, and sometimes on a very personal level, when the news, though true, was not favorable to them. And I think you've seen that effect echo across the political landscape. I think you see instances of that kind of approach cropping up in local governments. So, you know, all of that combined makes journalists a kind of easy target. And I think when the message is sent from Washington, D.C., or from the state capital, the state where you live, that journalists are an easy target and they are to blame for many of our ills, it makes it easier at the ground level for a police officer to do something like specifically target a journalist at a protest.
Right.
And then layered on top of that, we saw this incredible blossoming of demonstration and protest activity, some of which devolved into violence. And so there you would have police involved in a kind of law enforcement capacity. And that law enforcement presence at demonstrations, I think, always tends to be a potential tinderbox, because you've got armed police officers and you've got people who feel passionate about something. And the fact that that passion and the message that flows from it is protected by the First Amendment may not necessarily mean all that much in the heat of the moment.
I'm speaking with David Snyder, Executive Director of the First Amendment Coalition. So in this context, along came State Senator Mike McGuire with SB 98. This was in January, I believe. And that would ensure that an authorized member of the media can enter areas closed off by first responders during a demonstration, march, protest, or rally. And it also would prohibit an officer from assaulting a journalist or obstructing their ability to gather or process news, and create an accelerated process for a journalist to challenge being detained by an officer. Are those things not already technically the law?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Not exactly. So I think the key thing to keep in mind with SB 98 is that it, for the first time, says that if the police cordon off an area where there are demonstrations happening, reporters have access beyond that cordon. So the general public may not, but a reporter does. There's an argument to be made that existing California law would have provided for that. And I can go into a little detail on that if you want, but this bill aimed to specifically carve out demonstration and protest activity where the police cordon off an area as an area where journalists have sort of special access. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a new contribution to the law. Is it the law already that police cannot assault journalists? Yes. However, this bill uses several verbs. It's not just assault, it's interfere with or obstruct reporters who are within that cordon. So as I understand the second provision of SB 98, it applies like within this special zone, which the bill says journalists now have access to, and says, you know, not only do police have to let them in, but they can't then prevent them from doing their job. And they also cannot cite them for failure to disperse or for violating a curfew, again, when they're in that zone. So yes, it's the law now that a police officer can't just haul off and assault a reporter or anybody else without some valid law enforcement reason for doing so. But this bill aimed to create a kind of special protective zone in this special area of protests and demonstrations.
Yeah. And then more recently, SB 98 was amended a few times. And the first change really threw some of us in the media for a loop, myself certainly among them. There was a requirement added that, yes, journalists can access areas of unfolding news that the public can't, but only after getting permission from the commanding officer on the scene. And for journalists, that's a big, big hurdle. I mean, that basically would have shut us out, at least in my experience, because so often you go up to a scene and there are maybe officers, but they're not the commanding officer. So you have to like go through the chain of command and try and figure out who that is. And that amendment has since been removed after pressure from journalist groups, including ones, full disclosure, of which I am a member. Did FAC, did the First Amendment Coalition take a position on that change? And what did you think it would have done?
So we most certainly opposed that change. I don't believe we were on record on I saw a couple of letters circulating. That was really more a matter of timing and the fact that this happened, this all developed fairly quickly, than fact not opposing that amendment. I think it was a bad amendment. And the amendment would have essentially negated the provision that allowed journalists within that within the special cordoned area at a protest or demonstration. The requirement that they get approval of the commanding officer. I mean, so yeah, in practical terms, it's possible that journalists in that position would be able to get that approval, but I think it's just highly unlikely. So it essentially erased that provision of the bill, which was one of the more important provisions of the bill. So, yeah. I mean, I viewed it as a kind of a poison pill as maybe a little bit too strong because the other provisions of the bill would have remained, but it was certainly a poison pill to the key, one of the more important provisions that it contains.
How much is known about why that change was made in the first place? Why that amendment was added only to be later removed?
As I understand it, it was added by Senator Portantino, who's in the Los Angeles area. Why he added it, whether it was the result of lobbying from police unions, I don't know. I've seen speculation to that effect, but I don't know how that amendment came about. And I'm not sure that there's been any reliable or any reporting on how that amendment came about. But in any event, both Portantino and the sponsor of the bill, McGuire, on Friday, said that they're going to be removing that amendment. And so it hasn't yet, as a technical matter, been taken out of the bill.
Oh.
But they've pledged that. But I think the reason it hasn't been taken out of the bill is because we haven't reached that step in the legislative process where it could actually be removed. They've said they're going to remove it. And so I think everyone understands that is going to happen. It just hasn't literally happened. If you go look up the bill right now, it still has the language in it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, thanks for clarifying that. Can you say more about the status of the bill right now? Because SB 98 has not, in fact, passed.
That's true. It hasn't passed. It still literally contains that what I'll call poison pill amendment. But my understanding is that when it reaches the committee stage at which the amendment can be stricken, that is expected to be stricken. A very similar bill did not get through the legislature last year. I wish I had a better finger on the pulse of Sacramento to be able to tell you I think the chances are good this year or not so good, but I don't. Mm. I'm not that close to the action. My general sense is that it stands a pretty good chance of passage, and that passage would be the original bill, not the bill as amended. But I don't have any special knowledge or insight about how likely that is to happen in Sacramento this year.
Well, and speaking of previous forms of this, the governor actually vetoed a previous version of this bill in November 2020, saying that he was worried that it too broadly defined what a representative of a news source is, and that white nationalists, extreme anarchists, or members of other fringe groups with an online presence could use this basically as an excuse to gain access to places that the public shouldn't have access to. Did FAC have a position on that veto at the time, or just more generally, do you see giving too much access to groups like that?
I think it's a red herring. I think the definition of journalist is too narrow, candidly, in the bill.
Hmm.
The exact language is a duly authorized representative.
Duly authorized by whom?
Yeah, well, that's the question. But of any news service, online news service, newspaper, television station, or network. That's pretty clearly, working journalists who have credentials. Sure, it's possible that, white nationalists who work for what they deem a news organization could slip under the cordon that the police put up. But I think that's a red herring. I think that the police union still carry tremendous clout in Sacramento, both with the legislature and with the governor's office. I think there's a lot of pressure on those entities to not pass legislation that subjects them to greater scrutiny. And I think that's likely a much more plausible explanation for Newsom's position than the one that he floated, which again, I think is just a red herring.
Yikes. So if that's the case, are you concerned about another veto, even if it does make it through the legislature?
I am. If Governor Newsom took that position last year, I think it stands to reason that he might apply the same rationale this year. I hope that's not the case. I think this bill is a very good bill. At the same time, I think it's a sad commentary on the state of our world that a bill like this is necessary. Journalists should be able to go about their business and perform their constitutionally protected function without fear of being targeted for violence by police for simply doing their job. I think, your initial question was, isn't this the way the law already is? I think I answered at some length about how yes, and more importantly than that, I think there are social mores that have shifted in the country. I think it's much more likely in today's day and age that a journalist who has real reason to fear being targeted by police than it might have been 20 or 30 years ago. So all that's to say, I think it's a very good bill. I wish that it weren't necessary. And I think the fact that it is necessary is a fairly sad commentary, but I think it's an important bill that will help advance the ability of journalists to do their job, which in turn advances the likelihood that we continue to have a functioning democracy.
Well, let me go back to this question of who's a journalist and who isn't, according to this bill, because it's interesting that you feel that there actually should be, that definition should be broader. One thing that I think about a lot is who is defined as a journalist and by whom, because press credentials in a lot of cases are issued by law enforcement agencies.
Right.
It sounds like,
I think duly authorized is likely to be interpreted as a practical matter, but as authorized by the law enforcement agency at issue. You know, people who've been issued a press pass by LAPD or the San Francisco Police Department.
Yeah.
And those things aren't handed out willy-nilly. You have to demonstrate, you know, a real connection with, if not necessarily full-time employment, by a news outlet. And there are many types of journalists doing real journalism who don't fit into that bucket. I understand. Exactly. And so that's what I mean when I say that it should be broader than that. Earlier I called Governor Newsom's veto statement kind of a red herring. I do think there is some legitimate concern in defining journalists too broadly, both with this law and with things like the California Journalist Shield Law, where you would open up these special protections to people who really aren't doing what journalists do. I don't think that's a completely ridiculous concern, but in my view, it's better to open the doors more broadly and run the risk of allowing maybe a few folks who aren't really committing acts of journalism through, than to close out people who are doing journalism and are performing that valuable social function because your definition is too narrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, with the rise of citizen journalism, you've seen certainly a lot more people, and social media as well, you've seen more people participating. Perhaps we could say they're committing acts of journalism, as you put it, even if they aren't associated with a formal news outlet.
Right.
I wanted to close by having you talk maybe a little bit about how laws get made around journalistic access, because my suspicion is that most people who aren't journalists probably have not, prior to this conversation, heard of SB 98, nor would it necessarily affect them. The Associated Press, for example, reported last year that there were, you know, wildfires raging in Oregon, Washington, and California, but the images and the words that the public saw varied because of the level of access granted to journalists, and that access was actually higher in California than in other states. So I guess my question is, why should folks care who are not journalists about the creation of laws around press access?
Press access is essential to producing journalism. So that by itself is not any justification for somebody who's not a journalist. But I would make the case that journalists are the eyes and ears of the public. They are the only people in most instances who are in position to tell us what government is doing in our name. And so if journalists are excluded from a physical presence at a demonstration or at the scene of a fire, the public's ability to know how that fire happened and maybe more importantly, how the government responded to it and how effective that response was would be eliminated, except for what the government was willing to tell the public or the press about it. And again, having to rely on the government to provide an explanation of what it's doing and why would reduce us to an authoritarian state. I mean, that's what you have in places where the government has total control over the information ecosystem, is the government is the only one that really gets to tell you what the government's doing. That's an effective way to quick collapse of any democracy. The people have to have the ability to understand what the government's doing from some source other than the government itself. And that source again, called out specifically in the U.S. Constitution, in the First Amendment, is journalism.
David, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me about this.
Glad to do it.
That was David Snyder, Executive Director of the First Amendment Coalition. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Civic is produced at KSFP LP 102.5 FM in San Francisco. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Our team includes producer and contributor Mel Baker and assistant producer Liana Wilcox. KSFP is a project of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Find our reporting at sfpublicpress.org.